Off the ball on News Talk. Thanks to Air. Catch all the sports you love free on the Air Sport Pack with Air Broadband.
Stephen O'Neill has it back for Tyrone, seeking out Owen Mulligan. Mulligan out in front, Christie out of the game. Mulligan, they've got to work a score from this. Owen Mulligan, options to his left, still Mulligan. Mulligan, what a goal! That is one of the great goals we've seen at Croke Park. Magic Mulligan. They're level.
Incredible goal by Mulligan that time. He saw two of the most wonderful dummies, made out as if he was going to punch past twice, didn't foul the ball, just watch it, took a pass, John O'Shaughnessy, went again, Paul Casey bought the dummy, but rocketed to the back of the net. What a goal!
You picked the ball out in the 45.
I did.
Because you're running away from your man, you have to come deep, get it into the breadbasket and turn, and I've heard you say it's all instinct at that point. You're just reacting to each situation.
Just, you know, the best was I actually watched the whole highlights of the game on Facebook there last week, and I never realised that Brian McGuigan blocked the ball first, and then he blocked the ball off Alan Brogan and hit it to Stevie O'Neill and then hit it to me. But I never realised that. You know, you're just caught in the moment. Yeah. I never realised that there. But as I said, I was going to be substituted because I remember looking over and I wasn't having the best of seasons.
No.
I was out in another team and wasn't starting, wasn't that, and I hadn't that best game against Dublin the first day, or, you know, the other against Monaghan the first day out.
Yeah.
So I needed to do something, and Peter Callanan tells a story that he actually said to Mickey, keep me on for an hour, 10 minutes to see how we go, because we were interacting in 2003,
yeah,
you know, really well. So
he was on the sideline, he was coming on,
yeah,
and Mickey was saying, I'm thinking of taking Mulligan
off.
Canavan said, well, look, we linked up well, leave him on till I go on.
That's how the story goes, and, you know, he said that to me plenty of times. So, as I said, I needed to do something. I've used that dummy in underage and minor level and different club games that never really come out in county, the odd, maybe drop of the shoulder, but not that dummy. And
we're talking about the fake fist pass.
Yeah. It seemed to kind of half work the first time, but the second time it kind of worked better.
It was definitely bought the second
time.
Yeah,
young Casey bought it, but look,
Casey went diving way out that way to try and block it.
Look, the man, I think it was Andy McGinley running beside me, so I could have slipped it to him, but I says, no, I'll try it. And look, people were saying it was a great finish, great. I just put the head down and blasted it.
It's probably the right thing to do in that case, because you were being closed down. Looking back in it, there was no obvious corner to go to. There was no brilliant angle for you. So maybe smash it.
No, I smashed it. Look, and like a goalkeeper's reaction is usually dive left or right. So I suppose Cluxton was the best keeper, still is the best keeper for me about the place. So it was probably an extra bonus to beat him, you know.
Yeah. What's that moment like then?
Do you know what? It was a relief to get back into the game. I remember thinking, right, that's us ready to go. That's us ready to rock. We're back into the game. But I remember the crowd that day. I remember the both fans. It was like the roof was coming off, and it was a massive weight off my shoulders, because as I said, I was really, really bad all year, and it just says, right, this is maybe give me the kick start to push on this season, and maybe the wee bit of bolt of confidence you need, like, as a forward.
Why were you bad that year?
I remember pulling a hamstring early in the league against Leash, I think it was,
right,
and I was finding it hard to get momentum, and wasn't playing well, and there was all our forwards coming in and set up and playing better than me, and Mickey been ruthless that he was. It didn't matter if you were playing well in 2003 or 2004, if you weren't doing the goods, and if you weren't doing the goods for the team, you weren't going to be starting. So I think he kept faith in me after the Monaghan games, because he took me off in the Monaghan game, so he did, and I said, right, that's just blew my chances for the Dublin game. But he called me over to the training, he says, I'm going to throw you in this Dublin game. So I kind of think he maybe says, right, you owe me one here. So to repay him with a faith and repay the team, you know, for keeping faith in me was brilliant.
The really interesting thing is you're man of the moment there, really, because you've scored this amazing goal, and you get the hell out of Croke Park, get up the road to Tyrone ahead of the team. You don't go out with the team that night.
No, I didn't, because look, I always kind of did that. I always kind of slipped off.
Oh, did you?
I didn't really like the whole media thing. I didn't really like the hype, and journalists wasn't looking for me when I wasn't playing well. So, you know, I didn't really think the extent of the goal was that big a deal. And that's the God's honest truth. I didn't think till I got into my local bar, took a pint, and everybody's coming over and shaking my hand. Then the media was coming over, and then Hart came over to me on the Tuesday and says, you know, where are we at?
And did you, well, I'll pick up on the Hart thing on Tuesday night. When you go up to your local on the Sunday night. I presume the Sunday game's on that evening,
yeah,
is it?
Yeah, yeah.
So are you sitting in the local watching
the goal? Sitting watching the local on the Sunday, you know, watching the Sunday game in the local, and just, you know, then it kind of hit me, right?
Did the pub erupt? Do they all know you're there?
Yeah, I've did something special, and, you know, sometimes people are asking me, well, how did you do that? I can't explain that. It's just, you know, it's either in you or it's not. And as I said, it was probably a lot of pressure because I knew I was coming off. So I says, right, you could put it over the bar or you could do something like that. And I says, no, I'll need to go for something here.
When you see it in the pub and presumably everyone goes, you.
Yeah.
Oh, do you see it and think, oh, actually, that's an amazing goal?
I would never think that. No, I would never think that. I still don't think that. It's great to be remembered for that.
Do you think it's an overrated goal? I mean, like, did you watch it that night and think, yeah, it's good, but everyone's getting a bit excited.
Anybody that knows me knows I'm not into individual accolades. I've always been a team player. Yeah. I've always been that. And that's what I thought. It's just, we were 3 points down and it was better to get a goal for the team than not myself. So I could have passed it on. All right, it was maybe a wee bit greedy of myself not to pass it on, but it's either that or been took off. So, you know, I was glad to get it.
Yeah. Mickey Hart and the team are ringing you that night saying, where the hell are you?
Yeah, it was, you know, a couple of taxes here. You're not at the, you know, the, you know, the dinner, you're not at the meal after the game. I never responded, never. And then I went to the training the next night and he came over to me and he says, do you realise just what you've did here?
Yeah.
And I was like, what do you mean? And he's like, you know, you've just probably scored one of the best goals ever in GA. I says, thanks. He says, look, there's a pile of journalists wanted to speak to you. I says, look, they didn't want me before the match or, you know, the Monaghan game. I says, they're not going to get me after the game.
Yeah.
But it all went full circle. As I said, it kicked my season on, and then the Armagh game and then the Kerry in the final. Yeah. It was enjoyable once that weight's lifted off your shoulder. Any forward will tell you, if there's a weight on your shoulder and you're trying to, you know, you're maybe trying too hard, you're maybe trying too hard to impress, you don't do your usual thing. You don't, you know, when you give the ball away, you shoot ridiculous angles. It's just crazy. Like,
it's funny. It was that we were doing the game yesterday. Mossy Quinn was there, and we're just chatting about Connolly, you know, and will he start? Won't he start? And, you know, Mossy made a good point, I guess, thinking like a forward, and you've just jogged it in my memory now, where he was saying, well, there could be an argument to start him because there's a few lads there who are new enough into the team, and if they start badly, have a wide or drop a ball, they're looking over the sideline thinking, oh, Connolly's going to come on.
Yeah,
you know, so
like, he's right.
So
he's,
important for
he's
a forward.
Right. See, like, if you're not playing well and you miss a couple of chances, like I did, I remember, and I can tell this in 2005, you're always, as you say, looking over the shoulder, who's warming up there?
Yeah.
Who's warming up? And then you lose the ball again, you're saying, right, that's definitely me off.
Yeah.
You know, it plays in your mind. And if you're asking me, I wouldn't start Connolly now. I definitely wouldn't start Connolly, but say Galway.
You're Tyrone, man. Yeah. See, wouldn't put him on
it
at
seems,
all.
No, keep him off. But it seems to be, Galvin seems to like playing with his best team at the last 20, but Hart seems to be doing that as well.
It's the way it's going. Look at yesterday's game. I mean, it's in the melting pot until
it seems to be. Like, both sets of squads have serious forwards coming on. There's a lot of medal winners there, and you only had a look at Bernard Brogan there, like, coming on five from play.
Yeah.
When Rock got blackyarded, it's some sub to bring on.
You're a man of contradictions, really, because the eye-catching blonde hair, the flamboyance on the pitch. You score a great goal against Dublin as well. I remember, might have been in the following game. The famous celebration is just walk slowly and stare at the hill. You know, real, you'd use the phrase attention grabbing.
If
I didn't know you, I'd say loves attention, loves the flashbulbs, and he'll talk to everyone in the media who wants him.
Yeah. Don't get me wrong, I had no right to taunt the crowd, the Hull 16. I had no right to do that because the season I was having.
Yeah.
I don't think I would have taunted the crowd anyway because I have too much respect for one, the Dublin team, and one, the Dublin crowd. I think that Hull 16 is one of the best spectacles you'll see in GAA with the, you know, the crowd, the singing. I'm a big Liverpool supporter, so it reminds me sort of the Cup. But when you see that crowd, you love playing that. You love playing in front of that sort of, you know, atmosphere. You love, like, the whole sort of, the way they grab you, the way they suck you in.
Yeah.
I had no right to, you know, give the air signals to the crowd or none of that there. I was having a bad season. I've seen Hull 16 swallow up many a forward.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Didn't swallow you up. I mean, it could have.
Don't get me wrong, it could have.
Yeah.
But I embraced it. I'm glad I embraced it. I think Dublin and the Dublin supporters and the whole Croke Park seemed to bring the better out of me, and I wouldn't be afraid to say that.
Yeah. I think a story which really encapsulates you. You're far from perfect, and you never claim to be perfect. But you also fully cop up or admit when you've messed up. And in 2008, the final, where you go out for a few drinks, more than a few drinks, probably the week of the final.
Yeah.
He's like 5 pints and then the gin starts. It's a big night and you're with another player who you're probably leading astray a little bit. And great night. And then you play a challenge match the next day or a training match and you play great.
Yeah.
Your drinking buddy doesn't do so well. and you get 15 minutes in the 08 final coming on. You do okay and it's a third All-Ireland medal. And interestingly, at full time, when it should be great celebrations and you should be part of the team, because of the season you've had, haven't played that many games, and the way you behaved the week of the final, you don't take part in the celebrations. You kind of keep yourself away, ostracise yourself away from the team, and probably not as good a night as it should have been. And that kind of captures a lot there. It makes you think, why did you do it in the first place?
I just didn't believe I deserved that medal.
Yeah.
I didn't believe it. I'd never give, from all our years and all our years in the club, you live like a monk. Like GAA players are doing now, you know, it's just training flat out.
And were you living like a monk in certain years?
Yeah, definitely was. Right. Definitely was. And any of the boys will tell you that, you know, we all were. Right. We all were. That's why there's success there. Don't get me wrong. There's rules there to be broken, and every Gaelic player will do that. But when your head's on the game and you've all like the likes of Peter Canavan and Chris Long to pull me in the line, I didn't have them boys, and I should have been acting as if they acted to me in 2003 and 2005. But instead, I was taking one of Tyrone's probably brightest talents of the way at the time, Raymond Mulgrew, own club man of myself. I took him away for an ice bath, which I thought it was an ice bath, and we ended up doing the full session like 2 weeks before an Ireland final. I just felt there was all our players that were still living like a monk, not getting on. And it wasn't fair in them, and that's not a team player.
Off the ball on News Talk. Thanks to Air. Catch all the sports you love free on the Air Sport Pack with Air Broadband.
To continue the Dublin Tyrone chat, we had Owen Mulligan before the news there. We have Paddy Christie of Dublin here in studio. Hi, Paddy, how you doing?
Joe, how's it going?
And you'll hear Joe McMahon on the line. Hello, Joe.
How are you doing, Joe? Thanks.
Good. I just every time I hear you, I presume you have a beard.
It's coming again now.
Is it?
Is that time of year again?
so come midsummer, you gotta just get that itch and let it go.
I do. I've been a teacher. You know, you like to try and keep yourself well enough groomed, but this time of year you can relax a bit more and let it go. But rougher than usual.
That's good. I didn't realise you were a teacher. So a handy life.
Same as myself.
Boat teachers, grand. Okay, yeah, good.
I would love you to spend a day in the classroom of class D2, say, so see how you get on.
No, you're welcome to it. So so Dublin Tyrone, I mean, there's a rich tradition here. Not least, I hadn't realised this, but it's obviously a pretty famous case and predates both your times. But right from the 1984 All-Ireland semi-final, Tyrone did a Mayo on it and warmed up in front of the hill, which I hadn't actually realised. Is that a famous one in Tyrone, Joe?
Do you know what? It was only until this week I'd seen an article on it myself, and I was only aware of it then. Right. I was only a year old at that stage, so
we'll have to dig out the footage. We'll have to dig out the footage. I don't remember seeing it. Paddy, 95 obviously is very, very famous. You were just getting started with the Dublin squad around that stage, played a few league games, broke your finger before championship, which wasn't ideal, but those memories are pretty strong, not least of the final, Charlie Redmond getting a red card. And you know, who's a referee to tell Charlie to leave the pitch? And then Sean McLaughlin, the equaliser, disallowed for the pick-up.
Yeah, it was a great game, actually. I mean, it was exciting. A very different game to the modern game. I mean, they were still the halcyon days of a lot of long kicking, a lot of sort of physical stuff, plenty of high tackles going in left, right, and centre, and it was a good game. Tyrone probably felt hard done by afterwards, you know.
Yeah.
In hindsight, I think they played some great football as far as I can remember in the second half, and were just, I mean, if they'd have got that point, you'd imagine they would have went on to win the game, you know.
Right. Well, where did you watch that show? You would have been 9 or 10.
I was in the canal end. I always remember Canavan supposedly picking the ball off the ground. I always remember it so well. I was down with my family, and I realised that the referee had blown his whistle, but many people around me hadn't, and they were hysterical. But it just wasn't to be. And I remember afterwards sitting with the family distraught in the stand, and it was a long journey home. It was certainly a long journey because there was no motorway and the car was slow and everything else with technology. But it was something that stuck out in my mind. And funny, I would always tell people about, you know, 95, I was sitting watching Peter Ganavan playing All-Ireland final, and 10 years later I got to play with him in All-Ireland final. So
yeah, amazing.
Something I'd always aspire to do.
I haven't seen the Ganavan pick-up in a long time, maybe not even since I actually saw it as a 10-year-old as well. Did he pick it up properly or not? Did it bounce? You're shaking your head at me, Paddy.
I think it was bouncing now. Yeah. Not that it makes any difference at this stage. The referee's decision is final, but unfortunately, I think there was a bit of space between the ball and the ground.
Yeah, I felt so too. As a 10-year-old, I knew it.
So that was 95, and then really it's over the last, 15, 14 years or so where the rivalry's just gone to another level as both teams really have started contending. Tyrone Dublin in 05, we talked to Owen Mulligan there before the news and he was giving us his memories of it. The quarterfinal stage, the first game finished in a draw, 114-114. I watched a lot of it back this morning. It was another cracking game, Paddy. The summation from Darren Maloney at full time was, have Tyrone missed their chance? Dublin very relieved here.
Yeah, there were two great games. I mean, it was end-to-end stuff the whole time. And I suppose Tyrone had won that All-Ireland 2003 and they had that little bit of extra confidence, I think, that might have been missing with Dublin. We were just thereabouts all the time over those years, here or there. We had a bad year and then a good year. But overall, the last few minutes in games where it was really, really tight, I think if you've won an All-Ireland, that makes a big difference. And I suppose a lot of the lads who'd backboned the team from the late 90s who'd won All-Irelands in 95, they were gone. Mm. And I suppose you had a younger group there and less experience. And in the last few minutes, I just felt if we had a few older lads maybe who could contribute in the last 10 minutes, we might have had a better chance, you know. We might have got over the line.
Yeah. We, as I said, Joe, we had Owen Mulligan on just before the news and he was talking about that first game where he scores the goal of the decade maybe, and he was saying he was having an absolute stinker, and to the extent that he didn't even hang out with the team that evening, he went up home to the local pub and Mickey Hart was ringing him all evening to see where he was and he just wasn't interested. But the goal stands out for everybody. What are your memories of that actual game in 05?
Certainly one thing I would pick out from that game is that the atmosphere over the two games, it was something that I've never experienced in my life. And I talked about the match and the build-up to the Tyrone Armagh game, the semi-final, the atmosphere that was there. But it was the sheer volume that was there. And, you know, people would always ask me, whether I was travelling around clubs, what's it like to play in Crow Park? And I would always went back to those games and would have said, you know, I could have been shouting to a teammate maybe 10 metres away and they might not have heard me or couldn't hear me. Whether they chose not to listen to me, it might be another thing. Mm. But it was just that whole atmosphere. And I think the first day, it was the changes probably at half time that brought us back into the game. Dublin finished the game or the half very strong with Colin Moran getting the goal or setting up the goal just before half time for Mossy Quinn. But I didn't envy Paddy's job there in the full back line, marking Stephen O'Neill or Canavan or Muggsy, because I had the pleasure of marking them boys behind closed doors and in the house games. But for him, it was unfortunate that he had to mark them boys in front of 83,000. And it certainly wasn't an easy thing to do. And with Stephen O'Neill, he was player of the year that year. I mean, the score taking that he took on both days along with Muggsy was sensational. Well, I think the second day between him and Muggsy, they got 2-10.
That's right. In the second game, so the first game finishes 114 apiece. That's the game with the Mulligan goal. And then in the replay, Tyrone, on the base of the scoreline, win it handily enough by 7 points, 218-114. Mulligan gets 1-7, his whole season rejuvenated after scoring the goal in the first game. He gets 1-7. Sean Kavanagh hits 1-3 as well. But looking at the overall scoring that season, Stephen O'Neill across 2005 got 549, 64 points. And the next on the list was Paddy Bradley with 35 points. And, you know, so like second and third are all 35 points, 34 points, 33 points. And O'Neill is there on 64 points. He's obviously a phenomenon, but that level of dominance on the scoring charts I hadn't realised from 05. Who were you marking, Paddy?
Oh, God. They were all a nightmare. And there was a lot of switching around that time. I hope it wasn't marking O'Neill for all those scores. But, that's the problem, isn't it, Joe? You know from playing a little bit of fullback yourself, if there's two or three good forwards in the full forward line, no matter where you look, you're screwed, really. Like, you're going to end up on somebody good. You can switch across, but there's always going to be somebody going to do damage. And that's where I think, you know, good teams win All-Irelands, that they have three or four or five scoring threats, and particularly in the full forward line, if you have three good full forwards, two corner forwards and a full forward, it's nearly impossible to stop them. I mean, with Mulligan, he hadn't, I think he was quiet enough that year as far as I can remember, next thing he just ignited. But
In the second game, he scores the amazing goal in the first game. In the second game, he scores another goal in front of the hill. And, you know, Mulligan being Mulligan just doesn't celebrate, just kind of walks very quietly and stares the hill down. And, you know, he's lucky he didn't get stuff thrown down back on top of him.
I haven't looked. I'd be one of those players who just doesn't look back on games, be they good or bad. But I just remember in those games, just the quality of the forwards. And, you just knew that if you gave somebody a couple of yards of space, you were in big trouble.
So you wouldn't quite know for sure who you were marking. It was a mixture of all of them.
The way the modern game, and the game had started to become modern at that stage, what I would suppose would have called the olden days, where you just sort of marked a man, you stayed on the edge of the square, and you just, if you won a ball, you hoofed it down the pitch. Like, those days were gone, and I suppose you had a lot of fellas switching. What teams were doing, I think Tyrone were at it as well, as fellas in the half forward line would work very hard, and then they get a breather for 10 minutes, so they have to go in the full forward line somewhere, and a fella come out. So you, the way you had to work it was with dangerous forwards like that, you just picked up the nearest fella to you sometimes, and I suppose that there was a bit of you could pass the buck onto somebody else in some ways. That's what happened sometimes. But the thing about it was, you just couldn't decide that you were going to man mark somebody to hold on, because the game was so fluid. People had started moving around in different positions at that stage, and you just had to sort of pick up the dangerous man, closest man to the goal.
Joe, what was the perception of Dublin in 05? Like, did you feel you could rough them up? Did you feel you had their number deep down, or were you very worried about them?
I think the big thing about 05 for us, we had come on a huge journey. It had taken us 10 games to win All-Ireland. Mm. And the journey that we had come with, I don't know, for me anyway, we didn't look, I know the old cliche, beyond your next game, but I don't think we could afford to with the form that we're in. But when we come up against Dublin, I think we felt that we were confident enough. We had the ammunition there to beat Dublin. And I think all the attention and all the pressure was on Dublin. Certainly, they're coming off a strong enough Leinster campaign as they had been around that time. And we felt that, we were confident enough. And with the players, as you talked about, the forward line that we had, the midfield, the whole team set up that was there, we had a chance against these guys. And as I say, Dublin in their home patch with the crowd behind them, that was something that we looked to get on top of them early and sort of quieten the crowd, because we know Dublin like to feed off that, and that was something we worked towards. Now, it didn't happen for us overall that day. Certainly the second day was a bit better for us, but it's always nice getting down to Croke Park and getting a crack at the Dubs.
Yeah, so 05 obviously finishes up with a second All-Ireland for that Tyrone group, which is a huge thing. I can still vividly remember in 2006, in the dark winter, Tyrone are All-Ireland champions. We've long forgotten the summer, and the league was not as high profile or as important as it is now, and maybe wasn't as anticipated as much as it is now. And I can vividly remember RTE News coming on and these scenes coming down from OMA. First round of the league. In the fourth minute, there was a massive melee. There were two in the second half. Both sides had two men sent off. Alan Brogan, Dennis Bastic, Colin Holmes and Stephen O'Neill for Tyrone. Pillar Caffrey took the subs down from the stand for safety reasons, supposedly. Mickey Hart said if Paddy Russell had been God Almighty, he couldn't have ref that game today. Paddy Russell described it as frightening, and the 2006 Battle of OMA is born. Paddy, I know you weren't there. You were injured. Joe, were you there?
I was there.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes a lot of sense.
Do you know what? For all that it was in a battle, I don't think there was one punch thrown. It was more handbag stuff. And I think I remember the time myself running over. I think there was a few words exchanged between Dr. Seamus Cassidy, the doctor at the time of Tyrone, and Alan Brogan, I think, as he had been sent off maybe at that stage. Mm. And as they made their way towards the sideline, I think Mickey McGee then trotted along to Brogan, and then it sort of kicked off from there. But and then when you see in the camera then shifting to the stand, and the Dublin subs, I think, were aggravated and wanted to get down even onto the pitch to protect a few of their on-the-pitch players. But listen, I don't think there was nothing much in it. Seen worse.
Yeah, no, for sure. I'd say you've been involved in worse. That suggested to all of us on the outside there was a massive needle between these two squads, and you hated each other. Like, was your sense before that match in the league in 06 that, based on the 05 quarterfinal, that there was a bad relationship between the teams, or did it surprise you that it turned so nasty in that match?
I wouldn't have seen any animosity really between the two teams, to be honest with you. It was probably maybe they probably wanted to bring that bit of intensity just to mix it up a bit, and felt that they could do that and get on top of Tyrone and see what we were made of. And I think they made it come out on top that day. They made it won, did they? I'm not too sure. But anyway, that was the game that they were bringing. And again, in the past, we brought it to teams and asked questions. So
was that tally, Paddy? Maybe were the Dubs looking back in 05 and saying, let's go up here and put a mark on these lads?
Yeah, I think it was a point to prove, obviously. I mean, got beat in, I suppose, arguably their home patch, no matter what anyone says about Croke Park. It's as Joe said, it's Dublin's home patch, and had got beat after a replay. Probably had got out-muscled a little bit
in
05, and or felt they had got out-muscled. And went up, and in the same way that Tyrone laid down a marker in Croke Park, in Dublin's home patch, Dublin felt the opportunity there to go up to their place, be well known, to be difficult to get a result up there. That was the place to do it on a muddy day in whatever, February or March. And
so were you just watching at home thinking, good on him?
It was, it was a hard game to watch as regards a purist. I mean, you were looking at it with your Dublin jersey on you, but I mean, it was tough stuff. Now, I'd agree with Joe. There wasn't anything major in it. It just, I suppose, there was an ongoing niggle there. And that's what you'd get between two teams who were ferociously intense and wanted to prove a point. And I mean, Dublin had that little bit more in them that day. Probably Tyrone got a little bit caught on the hop. But of course, they, like true champions, they reacted and they were able to come back. And they sort of got on top, as far as I remember, that day again. And I think Dublin eventually just squeezed through. But it was a very, very intense game in sort of wintry conditions. I mean, that's what you get between two teams who want to win.
Because there was a Parnell Park game where Senan Connell was stretchered off early on as well. Like, the league games were every bit as tough. I don't know, were you involved in that one?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. All of the games, I mean, I just don't remember ever playing Tyrone where it was easy, you know, and that's to compliment them, you know. They were competitive in a challenge league or championship. That was the way it was.
Did you feel they were physically bigger than you as a team at that stage?
No,
it's an attitude.
Yeah, I think, in fairness, and to compliment them again, I would have always felt physically they weren't a huge team, but the football that they played and the intensity and the ferocity that they had in the tackle got them through a lot of the time. And I suppose it wasn't a case of big, huge men. I mean, when you look through teams over the years, in my early days, Meade would have had a couple of very big physical men. Mm. Kildare would have had a couple of very big physical men, 6'3", 6'4", 15 stone. If they hit you and you were 19 years of age, probably snap you in two, like, you know. I don't think Tyrone really had that type of fella, you know, a lot of mobile, smaller fellas, but very aggressive.
Yeah, and I think that's the point to make here, because we're half winding you up a little bit, Joe. But like, the thing, looking back at the 05 games on YouTube today, and then we'll move on to 08 now, the other quarterfinal, is, I mean, the football that Tyrone played at times was just fantastic. And really, they drove the game on with regard to a kind of total football. You know, it's funny, I was watching the 05 game, and one of the cornerback, his name escapes me now, but I mean, there was, on the commentary, they're saying, oh, and the cornerback's up now, you know, and that's just taken for granted now. But even in 05, it was, if not quite revolutionary, it was certainly it was certainly progressive. I can't get that word out, but it was certainly remarked upon, you know. Oh geez, the cornerback's up here setting up Stephen O'Neill for a score in 05. And like, that's what you guys were about as well. I know we talk about the physical side of things, but it was that total football which is kind of taken for granted now.
Yeah, I think Paddy alluded to it earlier about the game was starting to evolve at that stage. You know, you weren't confined to the one position, and that was something that we were confident in.
Yeah.
You could have had the likes of Ricey shooting up the pitch, the likes of Philly Jordan from wing back, Davy Hart, Gormley, myself, just at any stage, you know, any one of us were confident enough to get forward. And I know Mickey has alluded to it this week or last week in an article, about any one player can get in the position and take a score. And that's one thing probably you'd always take from throwing football, is there are a lot of footballers. Granted, you know, they're there, they're playing a system, but they're footballers playing a system there. And as I say, when you have the likes of, you look up, you're threading the ball through to Brian McGuigan there, and he's piecing things together and knitting the play and firing it on to Peter Canavan. You might have Sean Cavanagh, you might have Conor Gormley coming off the shoulder. We were blessed to have that pick of players. And I think the big thing where these things were tested and game plans were tested were the in-house games. You know, it wasn't made any secret that we didn't go outside our county to get the games. And that's where we found ourselves playing the in-house games and playing that intensity and being confident to get up and get the scores. And it was a bad job when you were playing midfield as well, and Paddy McConnell was hitting a quick kick out and him coming run out past you, and you were supposed to be midfield to get the ball. But that was probably the game that was starting to evolve at that stage.
Yeah. So 2008 then, the next quarter-final, Tyrone ultimately finished the season All-Ireland champions, and it's a demolition job, really. Tyrone 3-14, Dublin 1-8. Dublin are feeling really good about life at this stage, that young team that Paddy talks about. I know you'd left the setup the year before then, Paddy, but that young team are at a really good age. They beat Wexford in the Leinster final 223 to 9 points, probably still at a time where that was seen as, Dublin's form in Leinster was seen as a good indication of what kind of shape they were in, whereas now Leinster isn't even seen as relevant to how they'll go in the bigger games. But 223 was put on Wexford, really good score. Whereas Tyrone, beaten by Down and Ulster, then beat Louth, Westmeath and Mayo, and just not seen as being in great shape, Joe. And I think everybody remembers that game very well, in the rain. And you all arrive with beards as well, as the other thing. Is it you? It's Ryan McManaman who starts that, or is it you?
Well,
you definitely have the best beard.
Between the two of us now, it was we started it off. I think a few fellas joined along the way, and
Kieran Gourley and Penrose joined in.
They did, and Muggsy joined at a stage. Now you started to see his strawberry blonde coming through at that stage. But I remember the day in itself. I mean, it's a bit like today up in Oma. It's torrential rain here, but I think the big thing was that they absolutely nobody was giving us a chance.
No.
Probably for me anyway, it was probably one of the biggest games that I've ever went into as confident as I had been, because there was no pressure on us and we were able to play with the freedom and knowing that all the pressure was on Dublin. And I know we stumbled through the back door. We'd stumbled coming past Mayo. Mayo had an opportunity to beat us. And, you know, a lot of similarities probably to Mayo now coming through the back door as they are at the minute. How that'll fare out for them, time will tell. But, you know, us coming through that back door, but we still knew that we hadn't played our best football. But we felt that things were going well in training. We were confident, we were happy with training, with in-house games, everything was competitive. And with that pressure in Dublin, you know, all we could go out and express ourselves, and just everything happened so well for us that day.
Yes, amazing moments. Like, you were 3 points up on 25 minutes, and then Sean Kavanagh scored a goal to go 6 points up. He took about 18 steps as well, if you remember as well. It was like outrageous.
The drill was in or something like that.
Outrageous number of steps from Kavanagh. And then Dublin got a goal back. And then, of course, just before half time, the bearded wonder pops up with a goal himself. We have the commentary here.
Tommy McGuigan feels he has the beating of Barry Cahill. He's really quick on his feet. Good sidestep. Free man is Joe McGuigan. There's a Dublin player down injured just on the 45-metre line, but Joe McMahon, well, he just snuck forward, and the Tyrone supporters can't believe it. McGuigan was superb over here. Where was the defence? And Joe McMahon, the coolest man in Croke Park from right here.
There we go, not bad.
I'll never get tired of hearing that.
And there was a close-up and the rain and the beard. It just looked amazing. These lads won't be stopped. And they're, like, a few minutes into the second half, Tyrone were 9 points up. It was done. It was over.
Yeah. I mean, that was, as I say, that was the confidence that we had that day. And just everything in a way went for us. And behind it all, we probably felt that, you know, Dublin had coasted through in a way in Leinster, and we had were battle hardened at that stage. And I know Paddy had alluded to it earlier as well about, you know, Dublin haven't had any success maybe previous to that outside of Leinster, and we ourselves during that time had experienced a lot of hard fought games, and knew that we'd been to the well and we could go there again. And I think Davy Hart, he popped up with a goal as well in the second half. I mean, for even him to pop up for a goal, I mean, it must have been our day, but it was just a great occasion. And knowing that we had Wexford then the next day out, and it was an easier pathway to get down there and finally again.
Yeah, it's obviously a different Dublin in 2017, Paddy. What happens Sunday?
What will happen Sunday? I think it'll be very close. I'd imagine that Tyrone will, like any team, up against as underdogs up against the favourites, they'll be looking to try and start well. I mean, the big problem is if Dublin get on top early and start kicking scores, or if they get a goal early, I'd imagine that Tyrone will try everything within their power to stop that. If Tyrone are in the game at half time, I'd be very, very fearful.
Right.
Like, I think 10 minutes in the second half in particular, if Tyrone are still there, a point or two behind or ahead, I think, you know, what I'm hoping as a Dublin supporter is that Dublin will be 4 or 5 points up, keep ahead the whole time. I expect Tyrone still to be within reach and distance, but if Dublin keep that gap, I'd be happy enough with that. And I think if they end up winning by 3 or 4 points in a tough game, that's grand, and that's good preparation for a final. I obviously, if it goes the other way and if Tyrone get 3 or 4 points up, I would be very, very worried in both halves, and particularly at the end of the game. If Tyrone have got that little gap, I just don't see them letting Dublin in, you know. So Dublin have to start very, very quick, I think. And I suppose some of it would be dictated by the weather as well. I mean, you'd hope that the conditions would be nice and dry. You'd expected that would suit Dublin. But the funny thing about it was, going back to that game in 2008, it was absolutely lashing out of heavens, and Tyrone played the best football of their life. One of the best performances I've ever seen anybody, I think. I remember them flicking balls off the ground and palming balls down to fellas running in, and all types of sort of Harlem Globetrotter sort of stuff, you know. So I suppose you can't really talk about conditions wise. Overall, I still feel that a dry ball would suit Dublin. And I think when Tyrone are putting that massive pressure on, particularly within the sort of 30 metre zone there around their own goals, when they're putting on that sort of defensive pressure, it's that bit easier when a forward is slipping and sliding and trying to keep his footing. To put the pressure on, you know.
Final word to you, Joe.
I think Tyrone will be looking for a good start. As alluded to earlier again about Dublin, Tyrone quiet in the crowd, I think Mickey will be looking to do that, getting top. And I feel that he'll look to push up on Clarkson's kickouts to stop that initial attack and put the pressure on Clarkson there. For Tyrone need their key players, their key men to stand up, and for the system to stand up and stop the goals throughout, and certainly early on. And as Paddy said, he's talked about being in the game early and being in the game towards the end, and that's something that Tyrone will be looking to do. In terms of Dublin, I would be wary of their fluency, of their attack, their power, their pace. I've watched them and how they attack the stretch, the defence, they come in off the wing, they come on and off at angles, and I'm sure Mikael have thrown defence well prepared from that point of view, but possibly another draw on the cards.
Yeah, wouldn't be surprised. Lads, great to have you with us. Joe McMahon, thank you very much. Joe, Paddy Christie, thanks for coming to the studio. We'll take a short break. We're talking to Gavin Cumminsky about the rugby this afternoon in Belfast next.
Off the ball on News Talk. Thanks to Air. Catch all the sports you love free on the Air Sport Pack with Air Broadband.